Welcome to 1514, a podcast of the Biblical Counseling Coalition, where we draw from the words of Romans 15:14 to encourage all Christians that they are full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, and able to counsel one another. I'm your host and director of the Biblical Counseling Coalition, Curtis Solomon. Welcome back to 1514. Thanks so much for joining us. I pray that you find this podcast a real blessing to you and to you, anybody else you get to share it with. Please be spreading the word about 1514 as well as the Biblical Counseling Coalition. We really want to be a blessing to many, many people, and that grows through word of mouth especially. Today I have a special guest with me from the other side of the planet. Josh Mack is joining us today. Josh, for those of you who don't know him, has an MA in Biblical Counseling and an MDiv from the Master's College and the Master's Seminary, and then a Doctorate in Ministry from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's a pastor and teacher who is living in Pretoria, South Africa, and he's the Executive Director of One Hope Ministries. He and his wife, Marta, have a massive family that you'll get to see a picture of here in a moment if you're watching online. And you can check out numerous books that Josh has written or co-written at Josh and Marta, WordPress.com, as well as Amazon and other places you can find books. So, Josh, thanks so much for being here with us.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. Thanks for thinking of me.
So, Josh, in addition, you're also a member on the BCC Council, so thanks for being that as well. For those who don't know you as well, and in addition to all the stuff that I just said, could you just kind of give us a little introduction to yourself and your family?
Yeah, I think you said a lot of the important stuff. My name's Josh Mack, and I'm a pastor in South Africa. I have 9 children. I guess that's a little unusual. Six from me and my wife, and then 3 that are adopted. We moved to Africa with 3 children about 12 years ago. And so we tripled. We tripled in 12 years, but I think we're done. The quiver is full, and it's always a party around here. And we're just really happy to be Christian, serving Jesus with our family here in Africa.
Josh, I'm not going to completely test your memory on the exact ages of all your kids, but give us a span, like oldest and youngest.
Yeah, at least that's pretty easy. 5 to 18. So my oldest, we have 6 daughters, 3 boys. I always say it's not quite a big family because 6 girls makes it a lot easier. It's mostly mostly mamas and a couple of us boys.
That can be helpful, I'm sure, in a lot of ways.
Oh, my word. Yeah, for sure. But our oldest is about to go to a university, so she's leaving in August. My wife came down with cancer this year, so she stayed back from school to help with the family a little bit. But it looks like she's going to go in August. And then my second oldest is going to leave in January. So things are changing. But we got a long way to go. With 9 kids, it's going to be a long way until we have an empty nest.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if you start to feel the gap in life and want to fill it with some more. So
exactly.
Well, that's great. And I know I know the Biblical Counseling Coalition, we were aware of Marta's diagnosis and we're praying for you. It came about around the time that we were all gathering together in December, and we've been praying for you, and they'll be glad to hear that things are going well with her and your family as well. So thanks for keeping us posted on that. So Josh, tell me a little bit. I know you have multiple ministry hats that you actually wear. So tell us about those and a little bit about what those look like.
Okay. The primary thing that I do is I'm a pastor. And so we moved over to Africa about 12 years ago, and I was serving as a pastor in the States. But my wife and I, we really always had a longing to help actually serve in a place where with the poor and specifically with orphans. We just had that burden. I was in seminary. I knew my gifting was more teaching and counseling and discipling, but for some reason, we always had a burden for orphans. And I had actually been reading a lot of Jonathan Edwards and realizing that it was okay to have that burden and to love the Bible and love those who were in physical need. And so, we also began to realize that not everybody had that burden in the same way. You know, we all hopefully are caring about those who are needy, but the Lord gives each of us different particular passions. And so we started to just come to the point where we were realizing that, hey, God gave us this passion for a reason. Why don't we pursue it? And so we came over to Africa. We got to Africa and we're in a church there and started to develop relationships with a lot of refugees. And so that church sent us out about 9 years ago to plant a church in the middle of town. So South Africa is an unusual place in that it's still first world, third world. So you can have Beverly Hills and you can have the heart of Africa here. Mm-hmm. So, and most of those worlds are very divided. And so we really wanted to plant a church where the those who maybe were from a more first world background would be willing to change and sacrifice to serve and have deep relationships with those from the third world. And so one of the practical things we wanted to do was plant a church where it was easier for people without cars and things to come. So we planted the church in the inner city and we just have loved it. So that's one thing that we do. And then another thing that we're involved in is a Bible training center. We call it African Bible Training Center. And one of the things that we found was that a lot of the people we were ministering to were either first generation Christians, or they were just coming out of the prosperity gospel. So Southern Africa, everybody would almost claim to be Christians, but then you start asking questions like, what is the gospel? And people are like, wow, that is a hard question. So we would go to do counseling and discipleship and evangelism with people who thought they knew the Bible, were familiar with some of the words, but it was obvious they didn't really understand what it meant or how it worked. And so even to be able to do, and they didn't really have many of them didn't really have a concept of counseling from God's word, even a concept of counseling. It's more like deliverance and when it comes to problems and some sort of miraculous moment, when all your problems go away, not a biblical understanding of sanctification. But even to talk about that was hard because many people didn't understand how the Bible worked. And so we started a training center, which we thought would hopefully be a resource to different churches, but also equip individuals so we could even have better conversations about the Bible by giving really a biblical theology of the Old and New Testament in a year. So we're really thankful for that. We have about 60 students in that right now. And then also because we had that burden for orphans about 6 years ago, well, when we first came, we had a couple extra rooms. So we adopted children into our home and we were trying to figure out what should we do in terms of an orphanage and looking at different models of the way that it worked. And when we brought those children into our home, we just saw the power of a family and just an ordinary family. They were in good children's homes. But when they came into a family, it was like they really blossomed. Obviously that's God's design. So we thought, wow, if we could start a home that, if we could promote adoption, because it's not really a concept that many have latched onto, even among those who would say they're believers, but it's certainly not culturally acceptable in many African contexts. And then if we could promote adoption and help babies find forever families. So about 6 years ago, my wife said, why don't we try to start a baby home? Hmm. And I said, well, it's going to take us a while, like we've got about $100 to save a year, so we'll see what happens. But we just said that we were praying about that. And God raised the funds for a home in about a year. And most of it happened while we were sleeping. We would get emails where somebody says, I want to help with this. And so we really like to think of that God really started this baby home while we were just flat on our backs snoring, and he's able to use weak people to accomplish things, great things. So the baby home's been going about for 6 years, and I think 50 babies have been transitioned to families, and so we're thankful for that as well.
So in the States, I mean, adoption has kind of ridden some waves up and down. It seems to be maybe waning. I think in the past decade or so was a huge, huge push. What are some of the but there wasn't like a cultural inhibition to adoption. But what are some of the cultural stigmas in South Africa against adoption?
Well, I mean, it's a little tricky to talk about because Africa is not just, and South Africa especially, is not just one culture. Mm-hmm. So there's 11 official languages here.
Oh, wow.
And that's not including refugees from all over Africa. So in a sense, South Africa is like the America of Africa in that a lot of people want to get there. But once they get here, they realize maybe it's even a little more difficult than where they came from. Because of the first world, third world dynamic, you know, making money when there's all these rules is a little bit more challenging sometimes when you're a refugee and you can't just start a business on the side of the road or something like that. But anyway, there's a lot of different cultures. But I think in general, maybe a more white culture with the stigma with adoption would obviously be South Africa's 80%, 90% black. So there's a racial stigma, and you still, I mean, it's changing. So we know a lot of people who have white people who have Christians, believers who have adopted, but some of them have faced pressure from their family and even grandmothers that, you know, won't come over because of the baby. So that's obviously one issue. And then in a more African context, Africans in general are very, already used to living with a lot of cousins. And so there is it's not quite fair to say that there's not the concept of adoption, though it's maybe not as fully biblically fleshed out. You know, it's not as motivated always by the sacrificial love of Christ. And sometimes the cousins treated a little differently. But then there's also the challenge that, so there's not just one, there's a lot of this, there's an idea of this ancestral, your ancestors really, are you impacted by your ancestors? And so say you adopt, I'm kind of speaking more than I know always, so I want to be careful, but when you adopt outside of your tribe or family, there are some who might think that your ancestors will be upset by that. And so a lot of things will be blamed then on the adopted child. And so the previous president, for example, had made statements against adoption.
What?
For reasons, I'm sure somebody else can explain it in a more profound way, but that's the basic idea.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the insight into the multicultural perspective, like you said, it's not going to be one specific thing or others. That's important to keep in mind. So thinking about that too, especially with that many different languages and other cultures mixing together, what does biblical counseling look like on a practical way? Because I think a lot of times people imagine, especially in the States, we have this idea that almost mimics the secular therapeutic model, where it's you're going to an office, you're sitting down with somebody who's taking notes for an hour a week, and then you leave and you come back and you do that, and that is the way it looks sometimes. But we know it fleshes out in all kinds of different ways. For people who are coming, like you said before, from a perspective where they aren't even really familiar with the idea of counseling, what does that look like for them and in those relationships?
Yeah, I think that to start, biblical counseling has really helped me as a missionary. The training I had in biblical counseling, especially in cross-cultural interactions, because one of the obviously first things you learn when it comes to biblical counseling is the importance of listening and gathering data. And when you do that in your own, it's important to do that in your own culture, but sometimes it feels less obvious because you just assume that you know. Now, you probably don't know as much as you think you know, even if it is your own culture, but it's easier to assume. But when it comes to cross-cultural relationships, it's very obvious that you don't know. It should be if you're actually paying attention. And the problem sometimes we're in such a rush that we don't pay much attention, but you really don't know. It's very, so often you think you understood, but you didn't have a clue what they actually were saying. And so I think it's been just so helpful to be reminded of the importance of listening again. I do a lot of counseling cross-culturally with another. So if I'm meeting with a Zimbabwean, I have a young guy that I'm mentoring, I'll almost always bring him with me because he just helps me know that I don't know. And often he hears things that I didn't hear, and he'll let me know. And so I've learned to trust him a lot, and the other men that I go to counsel with a lot. We do a lot more team counseling that way. So in the cultural background of a lot of the people that I meet with, one, the church background is and the cultural background is that if you have a problem, a desperate problem, then somebody comes and meet your uncle or your auntie, or you go to a pastor who does something one time, and in that one time moment, somehow it's all fixed. So I'll often meet with people, and they'll have massive problems, massive problems. And first of all, in our culture, information is more readily shared. So they would say, in the West, we're free with information and tight with possessions. Whereas in Africa, they're free with possessions and tight with information. Now, again, that's not totally true, because we're pretty tight with the information that matters most, like we're free with extraneous information, but pretty tight with the core information, but it's still pretty true. So counseling is a little difficult in that people aren't used to sharing information. So somebody will say, Pastor, you need to come over. You'll go and you'll spend 50 minutes and you're like, why am I even, I'm asking every question I know. I don't know why I'm here besides I like to be with you, but, and then in the last 5 minutes, somebody will say, yeah, my husband just committed adultery or something, just as you're about to leave, bring it up. And in that moment, you're supposed to be able to say something. And then you start talking, and often it seems like people think that one conversation's enough. And again, cross-cultural ministry, people are very respectful. So sometimes they'll listen to you sharing quite a lot of information and act like it's really been helpful, more helpful than it possibly could be in one session, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Wow, that's so amazing. Now it's all fixed. And you realize, no, there's no way that I am that wise that I could fix that in 10 minutes conversation. It wasn't that good. So even the idea of in our church, and it's changing, it's really happening. But the idea of sanctification being a process, not just this one miraculous conversation, the idea that it's normal to meet and talk and apply the word of God and discipline yourself for godliness is also another concept that people have to embrace and are embracing, but it's not always just normal, the thing that that they expect.
Yeah. That's a helpful distinction and good to know if anybody ever goes overseas and does counseling in that particular context, because that could be a huge challenge. And especially if you're naive enough to believe that you're that good. I think all of us wish it could be that easy, one session and everybody's problems are done, but that's really helpful to see that and to understand that. So, wow, that's fascinating. Do you think, you said being in cross-cultural, that people have had given a lot of respect to you. Do you think being an American going into the ministry that you're in has been overall a helpful thing then?
Yeah, helpful and not helpful. So in general, when you're working with people who are more financially poor, so again, we're just talking in generalities and we want to be careful, but so they would say that often the financially poor are looking to the rich almost as gods. We live in a world that worships money. Mm. The rich worship money, the poor worship money often. And so if people think that you have money, then it sometimes makes it difficult to have a genuine relationship. So and this is what often happens in rich, financially poor relationships, is that sometimes the financially rich are using the poor to feel good about themselves and less guilty about money. And then sometimes the poor are using the rich to get what they want most, which is not help, but actually resources and money. And so because of that, that's why I love local church ministry, because you develop real relationships, confrontation, rebuke, all those things. But because of that, in Africa, it's a long history, but a lot of it, even if you're not rich, financially rich as an American, you are pretty rich. So you have access to resources that most, so my daughter's going to go to school in the United States, Lord willing. It's going to be hard for us, but it seems like she's going to be able to go. That's not an option that's available to most of the world. So even you feel kind of poor, but you're really not. And people look at you as incredibly wealthy and have a perception of you that it takes a while to get past, so that you can have a genuine relationship, even where they confront you. And there's been a long history even here of people feeling inferior because of their color, people acting as if they're superior because of their color. So relationships between people who feel superior and inferior are often very difficult. And I used to think that it was just the guy who felt superior that was the problem. But what I've come to realize is that that's a problem. But also, if you feel inferior, you're denying the gospel, really. It's a big deal, fear of man. You're not embracing the fact that I'm justified because of Christ. And that sense of, I mean, inferior is probably not the right word, but that actually creates a massive barrier to real relationships, because the person who you think is superior or you're treating like that, you're not confronting him when he needs to be confronted. You get more upset when he sins. You should be upset when he sins, but it almost is like earth shattering, because you've put him in such a position where what you really need to do is just confront him and rebuke him and forgive him. So those are some of the things that create real challenges. Americans, we tend to also be in a hurry. We like projects, and some of what makes for a really good ministry is relationships, in Africa, especially everywhere. But it's sometimes hard to develop those relationships because we always have an answer. And some of the Africans are respecting, you know, and then maybe we have the resources. So of course they don't want to argue. Someone might not want to argue too much because that person has the resources that you need. And so that person can be given a terrible idea, but you're not really willing to say it's a terrible idea because, first of all, they're in a hurry. And then second of all, because the resources really would be nice. So there are advantages, certainly. I'm so thankful for the privilege that God's given me to be an American and all that. But also I think there's some real challenges.
Yeah. So do you think some of that comes down to just relationship, like you said, the focusing on the distinction between people who see themselves as, or the rich and the poor, and the people who perceive you to be wealthy because you're an American or whatever, and relatively you are, that really comes down to a relationship issue. Like, I feel like you can't relate to me because you're at this level and I'm at this level. And I even experienced that a little bit when I was in high school. I was a minority in my school, being a predominantly Hispanic area. And people assumed that because I was white, I had come from this part of town and was from a wealthy family. In reality, I lived in the same neighborhoods they lived in. But there's that perception. So have you found, other than just the normal relationship building things of time and and just loving people, anything in particular that's helpful to remove that perception of unrelatability?
Yeah, well, I love the local church. I mean, that's part of being members in the same local church and working at having hard conversations, uncomfortable conversations. I think trying to not just process things internally in your mind, but bring them out and let people know who you are and what you're struggling with. God brings things into your life like cancer, you know, that help people realize, hey, wow, not necessarily everything about it, his life is easy, which is, and see a different response maybe to the trials. But yeah, relationships, time, we often say to disciple well, you have to waste a lot of time. You've got to sit there for a long time in people's houses and talk about, yeah, and even a big barrier to cross-cultural relationships is just selfishness. People are not willing to be bored, you know? Because a lot of times when it's not that complicated, it's just loving someone, they're interested in things that are different than you are, their background's different than yours. But we want to be comfortable all the time, you know? So we can't even handle a 5-minute conversation that isn't exactly how we would like, what we would like to talk about. And that's going to be a barrier to really understanding each other. And then pride, you know, the other day I was, I picked up the phone and I was studying. And so I said, this is Josh. Can I help you? And the person who responded said, are you always this rude? And I said, I'm so sorry. I always this rude. What was exactly rude about that? And she said, well, you just asked, how can I help you? And so I thought, this is weird. You know, this is strange. So I went to a couple of my friends. I said, I think I'm missing something. So I went to a couple of my friends and I said, this is how I responded to the phone call. What would you think? And they both said, oh, they just laughed. And I'm like, yeah, that is a little bit. They're nice. They're good friends. But they're like, that's a little bit rude. And I said, help me understand what's rude about that. Because that, you know, that I was trained to answer the phone like that. I thought I was being nice to say, is there any way I can help you? Studying, I want to help you. And they said, no, it makes it feel like a business. Like you're like looking up from your desk and saying, can I help you so you can get out of here? And that was a moment for me because, it's just was pride. You know, it's hard for me to accept that they could, that someone could see that response as rude, you know? But what I have to do is I wasn't being rude. I don't think as I look at my heart, I wasn't being selfish at that moment. I mean, I'm selfish a lot of times, but not that moment, I don't think. But what I did come away was just saying, you know what, I can just change. Why not change the way I respond if it communicates something different than I'm intending to communicate? But what can keep me from doing that is just like, hey, I'm right, you know? I want to help the lady, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, Josh, I have a whole bunch of other questions for you, but we are just about out of time. So maybe we'll have to pick up our conversation some other time. But I saved the last 2 minutes of our podcast for a segment called 2 Minute Favorites. So are you about ready for that?
Yeah, let's go for it. We'll give it a shot.
All right. And I'm going to give a little teaser for our listeners just to let them know that we're going to be recording a little bit later. That's going to be for BCC partners. So if you're not a partner and you're wanting to find out some other questions and continue this conversation later, consider checking that out as well. But I need to pull up my questions for 2 Minute Favorites and start my timer. So, all right. Here we go. All right, Josh, what's your favorite food?
Steak.
Steak. Favorite gift ever received?
My wife.
Favorite gift ever given?
I do. When I said I do to my wife, yeah. Sure. That's a good question. I don't know.
All right. Favorite word?
Beautified. Jonathan Edwards word. Beautified. Happified. Justified.
Favorite, least favorite word?
Pride.
Favorite book of the Bible?
Yeah, the book I'm studying. The last book I'm studying.
What is that right now?
Luke.
What's a favorite extra biblical book?
I like to Kill a Mockingbird.
All right. Then, favorite color?
A biblical book that's not related to the Bible, just a book.
Yeah, just a.
Probably my favorite outside the Bible.
All right. Favorite color?
Blue.
Favorite sport?
I like squash right now.
All right. Favorite sports team?
I like the Eagles, Philadelphia Eagles.
All right. Favorite candy?
Yeah, not so much a candy guy.
All right. How about ice cream flavor?
Yeah, vanilla. That's pretty awesome. Vanilla. Yeah, shoot.
Favorite verse of the Bible?
Romans 5:1.
Okay. You can go ahead and recite it if you want.
No, you got it. Romans 5:1. Look it up.
All right. If you could choose any superpower, what superpower would you choose?
Yeah, I think flying would be nice.
All right. And favorite animal?
Yeah, we have a Newfoundland.
All right. Well, that was a timer, so our time's up. You got most of this done, so well done.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. It's really been good to be with you. Appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of 1514. If you'd like to know more about the Biblical Counseling Coalition, please visit our website at biblicalcc.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at biblicalcc or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Biblical Counseling Coalition. Thanks again for listening.